Word Jam.
Rolling. Take 101. Lunatic in Sucre. I'm sidling into the city here, not terribly motivated to tour churches, museums, and other highlighted attractions. As I walked through the Central Plaza this afternoon, after dropping off laundry, a young boy attempting to sell me candy or gum from a cardboard box-top tray didn't give up at my answer of no. He opted for a strategy I'm sure has worked for him in the past. In Spanish, he asked me where I was from. He asked, "Are you from Italy?" No. He asked if I was from France. No. He asked if I was from Germany. He asked about many countries, none of which was the United States. When he gave me an opening, I told him in Spanish, "I am from the moon." He asked in English, enunciating a surprisingly large and unusual word for a Bolivian boy, "Extraterrestrial?" I pointed high into the sky and practically crooned, "Si, la luna." With a moment for consideration, he nodded his head, briefly paused, cocking his eyes skyward, appearing to picture the ramifications of a moon man landing in Sucre, and wandering off, disappeared into a bustling afternoon crowd in the middle of the sun-dappled plaza.
Actually came down the stairs and said to me, "Sabretooth was just claimed in this race. What do you think about getting a horse like that? Wouldn't you like to get a horse off the track?" And of course, that had always been my thing, as after I had Steve, I thought, well, there's another horse that's here locally that's kind of related to him. They have the same grandfather. I'd love to get another thoroughbred off the track and just have another, let him have another life. So just how do I go from Washington to Louisiana? I didn't know. And I'd called Frank and said, "Do you know anybody? Frank Lucarelli, do you know anybody in Louisiana? I'd like to claim Sabretooth and retire him." That was kind of the thing that kind of got me in my gut too, is why a horse of that caliber was now put in a claiming race, which meant that anybody could get him. Anybody could walk up and get any of the horses in that claiming race.
So, I know you went to Vinton, Louisiana to go to this claims race. Yeah. What were you thinking as you flew from Seattle to Reno to Houston and then drove to Vinton, Louisiana? Yeah.
I wanted to get him. We had to wire a little bit more money. We found out on Wednesday, and this is kind of sneaky. We'd been checking, because Sabretooth was actually entered to run a race on December the 6th, and we had sent money down, and I was convinced we were going to get him. I kept seeing him. There was one little picture that we could find on the internet, and that picture kept coming to me on the day he was running, on the 6th, and I thought, sure enough, that's a sign. We're going to get him. So how do you get a ticket Thursday morning to fly out Thursday night? That's prior to Christmas weekend. I mean, Christmas is coming Monday. I knew there was a reason why I was doing this. And I also felt that doing this was going to change my life. And I find myself in the middle of rush hour traffic in Houston, and cars are zooming by me at 60, 70 miles an hour, and I'm just figuring out on-ramps and the exits and trying to find where I am on the map. And thinking at that point, I thought, what am I doing? I'm gonna be run off the road here. I'm never gonna make it out of Houston. But I thought, hang on. And by this time now, fatigue's kind of getting me, and my eyes are starting to get a little. I gotta get out of the city. So I knew there were a couple of. I had to get to this one bypass on this highway, and if I could get there. And I saw that it was going to be like a two-lane road, and okay, then I can pull off, get coffee, and that. And so I did. I stopped and got coffee, and I think I had packed a couple protein bars, so got some food in me. And what am I doing down here all by myself to come get this horse? I don't even know. But there was something inside that, again, I can't really explain it. It was like it was magnetic. It was this. When I know myself to get pretty frantic and anxious, calm. Completely calm.
What happened to the track?
So I got there in the morning. Like I said, got to watch and breeze. It's about 80 degrees. And it's warm. It's sunny. It's beautiful to see these horses going around. Finishing their morning workouts. And I'm waiting for a room because I'm there about 9 and there's not a room yet. So I'm hanging out, and the desk clerk guide said, she had said, from Seattle. You're here from Seattle? And I said, yeah, I'm here from Seattle. And she said, what are you doing? Well, I'm here to claim a horse. And it's interesting how contagious, when you're doing something that's good, people like to help you out. So we're standing there, and they start walking the horses across the track from the midfield. Well, on the backside, they have to walk them across what they call the midfield to the saddling paddock. So I'm standing there with Rusty and part of the board that shows win, place, show, and shows the odds, stretches out to kind of cover some of that midfield, so you can't really... You can't see him walking from all the way from the backside. You kind of see him start, and then you lose him, and then they appear again. Mm-hmm. Well, we're standing there, and all of a sudden I just get this, like a zap that, and I'm kind of speechless. I'm just kind of standing there, and I'm shaking, and I can't figure out what's going on. And I say to him, there he is. And it's the first time that I saw him, and I felt him. It's hard to explain, but I felt him. His face hadn't come into view, but I knew that was him. I knew he was coming. Yeah, talk about a weird one, huh? So they're loaded, the race goes off, and Sabretooth goes out of there, first, breaks really well, goes first, leading for most of the race. And I'm getting closer we're all creeping up to the finish line, getting closer and closer. Everybody had been standing back, and we're getting closer and closer. I'm watching him, he's coming up to the final stretch, and you can see he really wants it, but he's starting to get overtaken. So in the last probably, 70 yards, he can't do it. He just doesn't have it. It doesn't have it in the tank. When we were standing there together and we were waiting for Sabretooth race to go off, he said, well, because this is the part when you get a, when you claim a horse, you don't get anything. They take, of course, they always take the saddle and the pennant and the number and whatnot, but you just get the horse. They take the halter. So you have to have your own halter, and you got to be and lead and be ready to go. So Rusty said to me, I stopped on the way up when I got your message that you were here. I stopped in and I picked him up a new halter because I had some old halters back in the barn But I wasn't going to go put an old one of our old halters on him, so I got you this new one. So there goes Rusty with the new halter into the saddling paddock. And they're putting it on Sabretooth. But I'm just in such a daze. It's not even hitting me. And then the assistant hands me this piece of paper. And I've got the program there, and it's all rolled up into a little wand, you know, I've got it all. And she hands me this piece of paper, and I take it, and I start doing this kind of the same thing, putting it in with the program. She goes, no. No, that's your claim order. I'm like, well, yeah, so you're giving me a copy of what Rusty put in the thing? What? No. She goes, no. He's your horse. A moment like this, when things like this fall together, and I hadn't seen him. Like I said, I'd seen him come across that midfield, and my husband, Paul, had told me, don't worry about it. He's just a little horse. Well, there was no way this guy was little. No. He wasn't little in any way. Not in any way. I felt like I was standing next to greatness. I felt like I was standing next to a horse that was the caliber of Affirmed, and he could have been. To me, because he hadn't won all those things, didn't make him any different than any one of those other horses that had achieved great things in their lifetime. He blew me away. And what was really weird is, for being as big as he is, and as new, I wasn't scared. I was scared at the changes that I knew this guy was going to call out at me. But he pulled me in such a way that it was like seeing someone that you didn't know you'd been waiting for all your life. Yeah. He was on the hot walker, and Rusty said, we were giving him water, so they'd stop the hot walker and then let him drink, because you want them to cool out so they keep walking, and then you offer them the water. So Rusty said, she's going to go up and say hi. And he was like silk, and the eye, when I looked him in the eye, it was like he just said, yeah, I'm here. And it was sort of like, now what? Now, you know, what do we do now? And it was almost like he said, no worries, you're here. So the rest of the crew had to leave and get a couple horses ready. So Sabretooth was out on the hot walker, and I'd stand there, and he'd go around, and he'd come up, and I'd talk to him, and then gotta keep walking, it's gonna be fine. And he was pretty labored. He was having a rough night. Everybody was really concerned. Rusty came out many, many times to check on him and said, it's good that you got him, because he didn't look like he was ready to run this race. And the other interesting thing was, he said, I haven't seen this horse on this track. I would remember seeing a horse like this, and I haven't seen him on this track, so I don't know where they were working him. They could have been working him off on another track, or they could have been working him somewhere else, but I would remember. And he was very concerned. His whole crew, everybody was making sure that he was okay. We got him hosed down and back out on the walker some more. And everybody, it was kind of the same as the people at the hotel. I think you know when you're next to something that's really good. And everybody knew this was a good guy. This horse was a good guy. He was a good guy, classy guy. He'd just been handed over to a whole new set of people. There were no lip chains. There was no heavy hand necessary. He was professional. He was a gentleman. But every time I thought, oh, this just can't get any, how much, you know, how, this is just peeling away all the little things that we put over the top of ourselves that we don't want to have to know, hide in this little comfortable box. And I knew that night there was no way I was going to stay inside this little box. This horse is going to call me out. And he has, in a tremendous way. Just a tremendous way. But that look and that eye, and I thought, how does a little girl from the Midwest with nothing and a love for horses that could never could make it happen, how did I get here? How in the world did I get here? Next to this horse that's so tremendous, and yet I didn't know. I didn't know what I was getting. I was going to rescue something that I thought was undervalued.
The song is called The Song That Contains King Lud's Theme, and King Lud's Theme is the theme that I want to demo for you before I play the song. King Lud was this sort of pre-Victorian superhero character who was the mythic leader of this group of disenfranchised stocking workers known as the Luddites, who have become famous today for their apparent hatred of technology. But what they were really upset about at the time was that a bunch of wide-framed looms had been put into service by factories, and the production of those looms caused prices to precipitously drop, and all of the trained, skilled stockingers were out of work. And so they started banding together and going to commit industrial sabotage at these factories, destroy the looms. And so they invented this superhero character, King Lud, who was their imaginary leader, who was a disenfranchised stocking worker. And his superpower was that he just got really pissed and destroyed looms. It's interesting that the Luddites actually were viewed as quite a threat by the English authorities, and during the time of their biggest uprisings, there was an act passed through Parliament levying the death sentence for destruction of looms, and Luddites were actually put to death for destroying property. There was one pretty famous supporter of the Luddites who was Lord Byron, the poet. Pre-Victorian sort of poet, romantic poet, and he wrote an interesting little ditty for them that I'll recite before I start playing. I want to demo the King Lud's theme, which when I wrote it, I was like, this is the perfect music for King Lud. To me, there's this intense kind of happiness to a certain sort of anger. Where, when you feel it, it's just really it's time to destroy some looms, you just think about it. So this is the music I wrote for King Lud, and so when you recognize it then in the piece, you'll know he's coming. That's the righteous anger building. The piece is somewhat epic, so that doesn't come up right away. You have to wait a tiny bit. Lord Byron's verse is, as the Liberty lads o'er the sea bought their freedom and cheaply with blood, so we, boys, we will die fighting or live free, and down with all kings save King Lud. This is like industrial English nightmare. Thank you.
29.